Lord God, thank you that we can come together in this way and talk about such subjects. Lord, we want to come from a place of thankfulness. Lord, in a world where faith is a difficult thing, faith can be quashed by governments and organisations. We can meet so openly and discuss things of your kingdom. Lord, we want to be thankful for that. And Lord, as we look at this subject, we just pray that there'd be so many little seeds of your kingdom planted in our spirits. Lord, that as we kind of go back to our churches, we might be able to work for your kingdom. We might be able to see just so many different signs of your kingdom breaking out in those communities. Lord, would you bless this time together? So we're going to plough on through the morning. Marvin's prepared some thoughts around the subject. I think pretty much we'll just let Marvin speak. He's got a real heart and passion for the subject, and whenever you kind of sit down and talk to him, he feels like somebody who's knowledgeable in that sense. So are you all right just to plough on?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm just trying to make it, because there weren't many, if there were loads of us, we were going to have small groups, but if we could just come nice and tight. We'll still cover kind of the similar themes, but obviously more intimately. And then look at today, I think mainly about, you know, just starting something off. And that's what I think when we were kind of leading up to it, that was the thought anyway, that today was not, I when I saw the poster come around with my name on it, I thought, oh, gosh, so I'm not coming to give the answer on what the church's response to the recession is. But I think there's definitely need for us to create space to think about what we do in Bristol. And in fact, I don't think it's just about Bristol. I forget who I was speaking to. I think it was after the EA Day of Prayer on the economy. And one of the things we kind of said was maybe we should be thinking as well about the big questions, about the way we've chosen to organise the global political economy. And it would seem silly that a group of people could meet maybe in a cafe like this and start talking about the big global economy. But at the same time, as we know, it was probably silly that Jesus pulled together, you know, 12, you know, outsiders, unlikely people to do something that's obviously had such a big impact on the world today and starting a church. The idea today is really to set the tone, because we are so small, is to really make it the discussion based. So I've got some musings, you know, just some things I've jotted down just as my own thoughts, and just bounce back any time. What we will do is we'll try and structure the time as well. There are three kind of areas around which some of our thinking, and we've met and discussed today as well, the way we think the church could really step up. And they weren't intended to be the three P's, but they've come out like that. And one is like pastoral, one is practical, and the other is the prophetic. So as we do think forward, we'll try and organise our thinking around that, and seeing if there are seeds we can plant and things that we can start in Bristol around getting organised. One of the things that struck me, I read a lot about Martin Luther King over my time, and one of the things that amazes me is, people often remember "I Have a Dream," the Martin Luther King speech, which I actually think, if he'd have known how it was going to be used, he never would have made it, because they make him out to be some kind of historical moral teddy bear, you know, everyone can agree with. And actually, at the end of his life, he was very unpalatable. He was saying things that Lyndon Johnson didn't like. He was saying things that that his fellow black church leaders didn't like. He was saying things that the white church leaders didn't like, because he was talking about some of the stuff that's come to the fore here, actually, about the dangers of a materialistic, as in consumeristic based economy, and militarization of the economy. He was talking about foreign policy. He was talking about ravenous capitalism. You know, these things made him very unpopular. So he didn't die a popular man. He's been, he's kind of been misremembered. But the thing that really strikes me about Martin Luther King was, for all the presentation that goes on, the level of organisation that was going on behind the scenes, and then, you know, churches coming together, getting organised. Even back to the Montgomery bus boycott in Rosa Parks, that wasn't just a spontaneous, she refused to stand up and all the churches and everyone abandoned the bus. Actually, Rosa Parks had refused to stand up a number of times previously, and the churches had been preparing for a bus boycott for years. So they had the whole structure in place. They were just looking for the... Basically, the churches had prepared, they were ready, and they were waiting for the opportunity. And that opportunity came up, and they took it, and it was the right time. Maybe 5 years earlier, it wouldn't have been the right time, but they were ready for such a time as this, you might say. So maybe that's something that we bring in now as we, you know, think about, you know, where we are. It's not just about spontaneously responding in some kind of spiritual bubble, but about thinking how can we get organised as a church. Just about myself, you know, I'm Marvin Rees, as you know from the poster. I don't have any immediate qualification to talk about to the church and recession. I'm not an economist. I'm not a politician. I did try to get a candidacy for Bristol West. You may see my name again, so if you do, vote for me. But I didn't get it. But really, it's just been always part of my interest in this question of the, you know, what the way the world is run and the decisions we make about the way the world is run, and looking, trying to understand the relationship between the physical and the material and the spiritual. Not that I think this it's helpful to divvy it up like that, but just to try and understand the fullness of what's going on. I haven't written any books. I haven't written any profound papers. It's just musings. So it really is just musings. So like I say, today we'll chuck some ideas out there, and then I'll just kind of throw some questions out, and then we can bounce around the questions and see where we go from here, and see if there's any traction. And if there is, then maybe what we can do is go back, talk to our churches, talk to more church leaders, and see if we can pull something together and see how we respond. I'll dive into a mute. I'm changing it as we go, so you have to forgive me. I'll dive into just one of my musings that I think is kind of helpful for a bit of context. And I use this at the day of prayer. I'm just really thinking hard about, you know, what's going on. And my approach to the world says there are events, and then there are things that the events mean. And you don't always understand what events mean. So Martin Luther King said, you know, we must move beyond the role of the superficial social analyst who only looks at events, without saying what are the underlying structures that generate those events. Because the same machinery can generate very different events. Example, I don't want to digress too much, but the policy of the United States after the Second World War was to be the global power. Now that policy was behind segregation, keeping black people down and keeping them second class, but it was also behind the civil rights movement and allowing the civil rights movement to flourish. Reason being, you can't go around the world saying, don't join the Soviets, join us, because we're the land of the free, when you've got apartheid. So it becomes a liability. So they're always driving for sovereignty, always driving for global power, but it produces very different events in different contexts. So that's what I'm saying, is when we look at this economic crisis and a recession that's coming, I think it is about looking at it and looking at the immediate challenges that we see coming up, and we're going to see it: indebtedness, family stress, breakdown. I work for the health service, and we are anticipating a mental health bubble, you might say, anxiety and depression. But it's about saying what's behind this as well. What are the things that we can't see? Now, that doesn't mean that they're all super spiritual fluffy, you know, nebulous, they can be really hard things that we're trying to grab a hold of, you know, be real pieces of political, economic, social kingdom, as in spiritual reality, but it's crucial to get hold of those. And I think the opportunity in this recession now is, to me, there's a great C.S. Lewis quote from Problem of Pain. It says, God whispers in our pleasures, speaks in our sorrows, and shouts in our pain. And I'm wondering if that is one of the ways that we can look at this economic crisis at the moment. There is a shout from God. I think a number of us would have been looking at the world over the last, well, like I said, I reference back to King, you know, the 60s, warning about the dangers of materialism. And we know, you think back to Jesus, you know, don't worry about these things. And then we have a global economy that's based 66% on consumerism. So it's based on a lifestyle that Jesus said we shouldn't pursue. So there's just come some kind of perversion within there. But there's an opportunity, I think, to, if I'm not suggesting necessarily that God has engineered an economic recession, but there is precedent in the Bible for God to say, okay, if that's the way you want to go, I'm going to allow you to go that way, and you can live with the consequences, and then hopefully you'll come back to me. And maybe in this, you know, biggest, you know, economic crisis they're talking about since the Great Crash of 1929-1932, there is a shout from God, and maybe within that our role of a church is to help the world understand what that, you know, the voice that's coming through. Because I guess in many ways it's about us attuning ourselves and having the ability to hear. There's a fantastic insight from a guy called David Corton. I was just talking about it just now. He wrote a book called Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism. And David Corton says in the book, he says, I'm not a Christian. He's a USAID employee, Harvard, Yale economist, real traditional economist for 40 years. And he says in his book, after stressing that he's not a Christian, he also says, we face a choice today between life and money. I say we should choose life. And that's his assessment of the economy in the 1990s. And when I read that in 1999, and I thought, gosh, I've read that before. And I think for those of us who read the Old Testament, you know, it can't escape. Deuteronomy 30:19. This day I call heaven and earth as witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life that you and your children may live. And it's interesting that such a mainstream economist was looking at what he saw was the failure or the corruption, the limitations of the way we've allowed our political economy to become ordered. And I say the way that we've allowed it because I think that in some sense we have created these systems, but in another sense now these systems create themselves. And you know, it's like it's almost some kind of Frankenstein. You know, the beast we created has become the master. So I think, certainly, I think within that there are some fantastic, you know, opportunities for us to really step forward and get involved in that discussion and be thinking, how do we help people understand more fully what's going on? It doesn't mean we come on and we stick the word spirituality on everything. I think we have to be wise in the way that we talk and not talking, you know, meaning, you know, abstracts that in some sense were in a language that would be meaningless to many people. But I think, you know, there is real opportunity here. Jim Wallace famously in his book Soul of Politics opens up by saying, you know, the Chinese symbol for crisis is made up of two symbols. It's kind of cliche now, but, and I've checked it on the internet and I think it is true. Made up of two symbols, one symbol for opportunity and the other symbol for threat. And I think this exists now. The threat in our economic crises is that we experience all these negative phenomena that go along with a recession that we can expect. depressions, anxieties, the stress that that brings to families, the stress it brings to communities and cities and countries, the rise of political extremism, alienation. And we've seen some of these things happening. We have Nick Griffin voted in up in the Northwest for the European Parliament. We had 8 British National Party candidates running in Bristol local elections this year. I think only 12 wards are up for election. That's 2/3. They figured there was fertile ground. I'm not sure how many churches are certainly in our church. I go to Hope Chapel. Silas was saying, actually, our pastor was saying he does really need to check out in the church and find out what's happening with people, because we don't actually know if people are coming under financial stress and the impact that that's having on their family. So these are all the potential, you know, negative consequences on the local, the national, the international as well. And I was talking to a couple of people earlier, just say we don't even necessarily fully understand what's happening in the developing world as well with this recession and how people will be directly dying. But the opportunity is there too, and I think one of the big the opportunities fall into a couple of realms. One is about the immediate, you know, the opportunity for the church to engage and to step forward and say, okay, we can do something here. But also the opportunity, like Rowan Williams said, that I'm really pleased he raised it, to stop, you know, it's almost like an imposed Sabbath at the moment, or Jubilee year, the opportunity to stop and ask ourselves the question, did this political economy deliver? Over the last 50 years, has it delivered what we wanted it to deliver? And my concern is, if I can prejudice our discussion, that what it's delivered is growth. But we've got growth mixed up with what the political economy was supposed to do, which was deliver well-being and life and betterness. Like this Paul Tillich, I was reading his definition of idolatry is when someone mistakes the revelation for the revealer. And the revelation of God is abundance. God says, here's the world, you know, the house of prayer for all nations. It's to be a place of plenty. You know, God doesn't plan for us to live in poverty. Deuteronomy 15, God says, if you do everything I say, there'll be no poor among you. Later in the chapter, he says, there will always be poor among you, because he knows we won't do what he says. But what's my concern is that what's happened in the idolatry is that the revelation of God is abundance, but we've come to worship abundance. And what we've done is we've put economic growth ahead of everything else. It's become the God in many ways, the thing that can't be questioned. And I tell you, personal testimony, I was sitting with Hazel Blears before she left government about 2 months ago, and I suggested to her that maybe the government should put economic growth at the heart and the head of government policy, and everything else comes up behind. Sorry, should put well-being at the head of government policy, and everything comes below well-being, including economic growth. She said, no. went on to give me a lecture about being anti-growth. And I said, I'm not anti-growth. I'm just saying the economy is there for a reason. It's not to grow, it's to work for us, not for us to work for it. But it shows you, you know, shows you where we're going. And I think too, I mean, just to finish off a little preamble, I was at the AGM of CISR. I always get the order of the letters wrong. ISR. I was at the AGM of ISR on Wednesday night, and Andy Padgett gave a fantastic story. I think really gives me thoughts on the place of the church and the role of the church. And Andy Padgett is the senior chaplain to Avon Somerset Police. And he asked the question, do they need chaplains in the police? They have all the systems in place. You know, they can get access to psychologists and therapists and all that. But I can't remember his story in absolute detail. But the upshot was, they do need chaplains. Because actually many of the things people coming to him about was stuff that people didn't want to go to the psychologists and the professionals and the systems about. So there's a whole area. They did this on Radio 4 just a few weeks ago with Humanist Society trying to stop the NHS paying for chaplains, hospital chaplains. And they spoke to some patients. And when the patient said, when her child, baby, was still born, she didn't want to speak to a cognitive behavioural therapist expert. She wanted to have a cry with someone. And the chaplain had a cry with her. So there's a role, strikes me as there is a distinct role. Not that we cannot be professional and have these skills, but there is something else to the fullness of reality that we bring to the table. And I've really been influenced recently by this Walter Wink and this idea of trying to understand principalities and powers in the world. and I think, and applying that to this recession, thinking, you know, as the recession bites, we're going to have a lot of services. NHS, and they'll be rolling out stepped care for psychological therapies. You know, there'll be psychologists around. Job Centre Plus will be doing stuff. You know, Bristol City Council will have a recession. They have a recession plan and recession activity mitigation plan. But I'm thinking we do have something to bring to the table. And one of the opening line of this book, Unmasking the Powers, Walter Wink says, one of the best ways to discern the weakness of a social system is to discover what it excludes from conversation. And for me, it goes on to say, to exclude spirituality from conversation doesn't mean that spirituality ceases to exist as a very meaningful part of our everyday reality. It just means we lose the ability to talk about it or conceptualize it. And Walter Wink says that the consequence of that is that we have experiences, but we miss their meaning. We're unable to name our experiences of these intermediate powers of existence. We are simply constrained by them compulsively. And it goes on to say they're never more powerful than when they're unconscious. And it reminded me of that C.S. Lewis observation that the greatest weapon the devil had was to convince people he never existed. And like I said, I don't want to get super spiritual about it, but it's just to say I think that in the fullness of the fullness of the church and our understanding of the world and the way it works and the language and the concepts that we have access to, that I think I do believe people need. And the dangerous statement is I think they need it whether they know it or not, because you know, you can kind of go anywhere with that, but I say it with a health warning on it. We do potentially have a really unique role to play in responding to the recession, helping people through the recession, and then learning some very real lessons and taking the opportunities to ask some very big questions and think about different ways of doing things in our world as a result of this recession and all the questions that it's now opened up into the public domain. But what we thought we could do is, and like I said, you know, please interrupt, I don't want to do too much, is maybe to start by looking at the three headings that we around which we thought we might be able to get organised, and just ask for your thoughts on how we might respond. We talked about the pastoral, the practical, and the prophetic. And when we mean pastoral, we're talking about those immediate personal, family, community needs that people have, and thinking about what the church would want to do, what we need to do, how we can do stuff as individual churches, and how we might be able to do stuff as churches together in the city, and in trying to work up a vision and a plan for that. When the practical, I was thinking actually, just think, if we did a skills audit of Christchurch, Woodlands, Hope, kind of three churches I know, how many financial advisors, accountants, people with very, very real skills. Even actually, as Tom Sine, I don't know if you've read Tom Sine's stuff, he's very much about the church getting organised around money, helping people get out of debt traps. You know, is there a way of mobilising the resources within the churches as well, where we can actually practically stop, you know, help people not lose their houses? Maybe we can, if people are paying 70-odd% on credit card debt a year, is there a way of mobilising resources in the church that we clear that credit card debt and they pay 5% into the church pot to, you know, to build up? I don't know, just different ideas. And that would be like a tithe, as it were, on being released from the debts to the financial institutions. And then the prophetic, like I said, is just about thinking about, you know, how do we organise differently? You know, is there a place to make a stand and to say the model that we've been pursuing is redundant? It maybe badges itself up with plasters and bandages, but it's not delivering, and you know, we've got other ideas to do things. So maybe we start with that pastoral, and just any thoughts you might have on what we as churches can do in Bristol pastorally to work with people during this recession.
Can I just ask a question? You talked about there being Bristol City Council having a recession plan. Do you know what's on it?
I don't know yet.
Have they got it or not?
Yeah, no, I've seen there is a recession plan floating around the council, around, and it's probably tied up with the Bristol Partnership as well, which is the local policy. It's just the Bristol Partnership pulls together all the partners in Bristol, voluntary sector, FAVE, statutory sector, health, around making Bristol's policies. I don't know the details of the recession plan as to yet.
There was a recession resilience fund announced.
That's the one, yeah.
Very short commissioning process. Hmm. And then the
I think that's the one that's been 30 times oversubscribed already.
That's the one. It was then looking at a set of priorities that they had, I think, about £350,000 just asking people to bid for work that would help counter some of the impact of the recession. Yeah. But I haven't seen the outcome.
Was that funded by the national government, release of money for advice and things like that? Wasn't there was a massive, several million was released. Is that the local part of that?
I don't know where they got it. I'm not sure.
Can I ask, I got here late, so did everybody talk about where they're coming from?
No,
that's a good one. I begin to realise already that there are people who got fingers in pots and pies and know lots of stuff already.
Should we do that then? If it's about us thinking about how we might organise and coming up with those ideas, should we do a run around? Should we start over here?
My name's Case. I do a number of things, one of which is helping BCAN, which is hosting this event, coordinate themselves and try and, as Marvin said, get a little bit organised in bringing churches together around subjects around social action. I'm also a volunteer at my church, Woodlands, where I kind of just get involved in a midweek church. But we're kind of on the cusp of trying to reorganise our midweek church groups to kind of be a lot more active, a lot more out there. So that's an ongoing experiment as such. So again, it's about activating God's people in, you know, a whole manner of different kind of circles and just getting out there and being the best advised person or the best cake maker, whatever those things are, but just actually getting active.
My name's Bert. My home church is Pip and Jay, it's down the road. And what I do for a living, I work as a freelancer and I try and help groups of people who have stories to tell to spread those stories and grow communities. So part of that is being based here as development administrator, telling stories about what happens here. Some of it is running a radio station called Chill, which actually is specifically there to help people de-stress and is growing very fast in a stressful time. And another group of people I've been working with recently is called Crown Financial Ministries. They have a Bible study that they that's been done millions of times around the world, only just starting in the UK, very much based on what does God say about money and who we are. So that might be an interesting thing to chat about later.
I'm Beth Simmons, I'm from Redding Parish Church. Somebody in our congregation a few months ago felt that it would be good if we could, we've got lots of skills, if we could get a group together to offer help to people who were being hit by the recession, quite a wealthy area. people wouldn't necessarily want to be open about the troubles that they're facing. So one of the big issues is trying to get people to realise that help is available. The other is us being able to provide help if needed. I work for Bristol City Council in housing benefits, so I've got a bit of knowledge on that front. And John has gathered together, he's a psychiatrist, gathered together some people with as a careers officer, as a social worker, finance person. And they've just started to put posters around with a phone number for people to phone in. But it's a very fledgling thing, and it's one of these things where it's a great idea, but nobody's got much time.
Mm-hmm. It sounds exactly what we're trying to do.
And what would happen if we really did respond? How on earth would we, cope? So I sort of thought, well, this sounds good. perhaps there are other people doing other things, and we can, you know, we can link up and share skills and resources and so on.
So is it just for your church community, or is it, or are you, the post is going out more widely in Redland than this?
Yeah, yeah, more widely.
More widely, yeah. So it's a service to the community, it's
not just
the
congregation.
Yeah, fine, okay. It's obviously got quite a big congregation. Yeah.
Yes, but more than the council. Mm. I don't know if we've really got the right way of accessibility, but so it is.
I'm Kirsten Reese, Warren's wife. Got a Hope Community Church, and I teach health and fitness. So I've basically come along because Marlon's speaking, but I think it's an important subject to be knowledgeable on. And as Hope, we could do a lot for the city if we, you know, really get on top.
Can I just ask, have you noticed in your work over the last few months a change in the amount of people coming or the stress levels of the people that you meet through your work? So do you feel that the recession is impacting that side of Bristol?
I haven't seen too much. I am working with a refugee group with women from Sudan and Somalia, I think a few from Iraq, and you know, things are tough on their end. And I have been asked by the council to work a little bit with them with exercise referrals. So I know the council is trying to do a lot more with well-being on the mental side of things, as well as other areas in the city. In terms of personal clients and things, you know, people are just making it more obvious that money is tight and they want get the training and improve on their well-being, but they want to try to do it as quick as they can and as many sessions as they can. So, on a personal level.
I'm John Doe, I'm the current director of the Church's Council for Industry and Social Responsibility. She's a very, very long name, but we know there's ISR for sure. And obviously an interest in an ecumenical organisation, a strong interest in how we can create, for me I think it's three things, I think focusing really on capacity, confidence and resources as to what we actually do. And then within that, recognising that there are some very, very clear current issues that Martin's been setting out, but also recognising that the impact of this is probably a decade and really wanting to look long term at where we go from here.
And Julian Perkins, two hats on today. I came because Martin was speaking too, so it's I am involved with Living Waters Church in Clevedon. And so it's a local church hat on just to see what we used to have a CAP centre, Christians Against Poverty Centre, but since the one in Bristol opened, we've relinquished that. But I also work for Care for the Family. Based out of Cardiff, as one of the development managers, and we're just looking at our response to the whole debt, particularly geared to the whole family context. And we have produced, we've got various sorts of resources that we, you know, we're working and just wondering how best to use them. We're in discussion with ISR. This is the bid for the money was to distribute a repossession, if it helped to avoid getting your home repossessed, for churches to take that and use in their local communities. Interestingly, we had a church in Raymond Park who did that, took about 2,000 of these things, and stood outside the local tube station, just handing these things out to commuters as they went through from the biggest commuter stations, apparently, in tube stations in out of London. And they were quite astonished that, you know, they were just giving them out to people as they were, that they were taking them and taking them away. And the commitment was that they could do that if they cleaned up after them. And they, after of 2,000 that they handed out, they only picked up two. So everybody had taken them away, which is quite interesting.
Well, it's very high. That's very good.
Well, they all left him on the tube, I don't
know. I saw that many flyers from last night on the road coming in. I think they tuned back on the cylinder. I'm David Max. I'm on the BCAN steering group, and I'm the Social Justice and Environment Advisor to Diocese of Bath and Wells. So covering the two unitary authorities that link to Bristol, but not actually in Bristol.
The two unitary?
Yeah, Baines and North Somerset, that's part of the sort of BCAN area. So, but I also cover the whole of the Diocese of Bath and Wells, which is Somerset, Baines and North Somerset.
So if you don't mind me asking, so who employs you?
The Diocese of Bath and Wells, yeah, but I work ecumenically across the area.
Caroline Virgo. I think I was, sorry, this is an aside really, I was quite interested in some, about 20 years ago now, the group was together from Bristol Christian Fellowship, which I was involved in, started the Bristol Debt Advice Centre, and I think that we did it then in response to the difficulties there were with money 20 years ago. And we, some of the stuff that we were talking about at that time included, I had a conversation with Marvin about it, so I didn't see that he thought where people, you know, come together and, you know, buy houses as groups of people to try and reduce the interest payments that you know, of all that they're paying, because obviously the interest payments are huge. And I suppose that listening to Marvin talk this morning, it seems that being here is like a repeat of 20 years ago, and I just wonder this time whether the churches can't learn a bit more from it. It's a reflection. And the other thing that I would say is that I am the director of Hope's Place. We do pregnancy related counselling, and we've actually seen our numbers double over the last few months of referrals are actually coming to the door. And I mean, one might say that's because one's getting a reputation and all that sort of stuff, but actually I think it's probably because, you know, when you're at home with a small child, particularly with, you know, not much money and, you know, there are other financial problems around, things just seem a lot worse. So I think maybe, I mean, it is about well-being, some of this, isn't it? But I don't know really what you do about it. I mean, it just seems such an enormous problem. So there we are.
My name's Jerry Hindle. I'm here partly because somehow I got an email about this meeting and detracted my attention, because in the 80s I was in a similar position and worked for Bristol Church's community programme. But of course at that time the work they were doing was funded by the government, and I was wondering how similar work could be done today if there wasn't any government funding.
My name is Eileen O'Sullivan, or Eileen Cahill, depending on where I am. And I'm a psychiatrist working in North Somerset in Weston-super-Mare, but I live in Henleys. And my interest in coming today was to meet other people who are interested in this topic and find out what's happening in other places. So I've spoken to people in the Redland, maybe to, I don't know who I spoke to actually, it was a social worker, I think.
That would be Ross.
Because, I mean, I could speak for a long time, I don't want to speak for too long, but because of the job I do in North Somerset, I work with people who've got severe mental health difficulties, and I'm lucky enough in my job to be able to sit at tables with people from the local authority and from the PCT, and so it's just a tremendous privilege. So I know about stuff that some of my colleagues don't know about, like the fact that the local authorities have been charged with almost a legal responsibility to ensure the well-being of their population. I mean, how nebulous is that? Mm. And so the local authorities, the city council here, has got to, or is supposed to, do things in local communities, even at ward level, to make it more possible for people to get exercise and to have stimulating activity and, you know, all the things to enhance well-being, which is very nebulous and very difficult for the poor council to achieve, which is tough. also I work for the NHS, so and I know that the PCTs have the same responsibility. So there are all these, and the NHS is supposed to prevent, you know, they've got standard one of the NSF is about preventing mental, the development of mental disorders. So there are a lot of key, the three biggest employers in any local place is the local authority, the PCT and the NHS. So these huge organisations are all charged with the one task of improving well-being, and in, now, in this year, in 2009, in responding to the recession. So with all that from my work, and then I'm in Cairns Road Baptist Church, and in a convicted Christian, but it just seems to me, I just had this, the light went on one day, and I suddenly realised that the way that all these players can, and including the churches, can help each other by maybe not creating anything new. Although if people, you know, although in some places people will do a new thing and will start up a little network that's in Redmond, or will start, you know, some individuals from a church might get involved in Christians Against Poverty, or an individuals from church might start up a book group or a knitting group, or, you know, but it doesn't. I guess what I don't want to do is, I'm not for saying we must create a new work, because certainly my experience is that everybody's very busy. I don't meet many people who've got time on their hands, and are just, you know, everybody is time poor, and to be honest, they're not becoming money poor as well. But what I am struck by is there's loads of stuff going on already, and if there was an awful lot being done by churches. But what there is there's a barrier that the most of the population out there are not even going to go to an exercise class that takes place in the church building, because they think it's cliquey, or they think it's religious, or there's just a little bit of discomfort about it. But if, I'm thinking about Henley's now, if in Henley's we were somehow able to get across the idea using the civic groups, and there are civic groups in Henley's, there's the Henley Society, there's the Sustainable Henleys, and there's the thing which the Bristol City Council has done in the last year. They've set up neighbourhood forums.
Neighbourhood partnerships.
Neighbourhood partnerships. Mm-hmm. At ward level. And what they've joined, just to give us a critical mass, they've put three wards together. So they told which three wards were together, and they've given them a little bit of money. I think it's 45,000 or maybe it's 15,000, I'm not sure. And they've told them, come up with ideas how to spend it. So there are civic ways, not religious, churchy-based ways, out there. And if we could, but the churches are so strong. You know, you've got bodies of people who want to do things, who want to get involved, and who are motivated by spiritual things. So if we could get involved with and get into partnership with these things that are already going on in our wards or in our local areas, then I think we could do a great thing without needlessly starting up new stuff which might peter out in a year. So that's my vision. It's very nebulous though, and it gives me a headache actually when I try. When people say put it on paper, and I just can't write it down because it's very hard to capture. So that's the vision I have for our, and area, which admittedly is well off and, you know, has all lots of advantages. Actually, I think there are very few parts of the city where there aren't local groups going on, whether it's a little, or where you couldn't get a little gardening group going, or a darts group, or I think this kind of thing could be replicated all over, because I know South, working in psychiatry, I know what's going on in Knoll and in the South Parsley. So I think if we could nail it, if I could get this somehow a bit more tangible, and I need people to help me make it tangible, then I think it's the sort of thing that could be replicated all over Bristol. Or it could just evaporate. Because it's so nebulous, and I've been struggling.
I think there's a good principle within that. Tier Fund, I used to work for Tier Fund, and they had this thing. I mean, they work in partnership with other organisations, so Save the Children, Oxfam, UN, you know, they work in partnership. But they also work specifically working up churches, you know, and it's about mixed economy where, you know, what will work where. And there are those services there, and I think it's great to step up to the plate and be involved in those services, and also to, and when necessary to do your own thing. It's just nice to hear. One of the things that strikes me is maybe one of the things to do is about, I mean, chucking some ideas on the table. One is about also, in some sense, mapping what we're doing and what's been done and what would be possible, because it is important not to do something that's so overburdensome that it all implodes and everyone walks away bitter and exhausted and unwell themselves. But there were quite low-level things that could maybe be done. I mean, there's a befriending scheme, isn't there, up in Leicester that churches have got involved in, and just equipping members of people within churches with some of the skills to recognise some of the signs of people under stress or anxiety, or, you know, just the kind of introduction, and maybe some skills with the ability to, you know, maybe make some of those early interventions, as well as those low level. The new mental health strategy, have you come across it actually? New Horizons.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh,
I've heard about it.
Yeah. I've been up to a couple of the seminars. Jonas, the new mental health strategy, which is taken over from the old one in October, it's really interesting, because what it's saying is that there's a whole raft in there. This is Department of Health stuff around connected communities. And it says if we want to have better mental health, we've got to have more connected communities. So all those things you're mentioning about starting up book clubs, dark clubs, that, you know, those small interventions, even the exercise class. I know, if I advertise my wife, one of the things about the mums and babies class that a lot of people spoke about when it was in the papers, there's an exercise class where mums bring their babies, was mums saying, I get out of the house and I'm not isolated. You know, and we know, you know, the postnatal depression is quite high. So these, you know, there's lots of potentials, as well as the, which is really, really interesting to hear about in Redland, you know, people actually getting skills-based organised. And it was interesting wondering, how is there a way that we could work where we could support local churches just running very sustainable stuff within their church, but also if there are skills in, you know, and we know the churches with the skills, you know, it's Hope, it's Woodlands, it's Christchurch, would be Redland, can those skills also be made available to Hartcliffe, you know, across these boundaries?
There's something for me that connects those, that some of the big issues you started off talking about the nature of society and the nature of the economy, as opposed to how the economy functions, would replicate down local level. And it's about, as the kitchen is, being and doing, what it is we're actively involved in doing, and what it is we're focused on being, our nature and our identity. And I think the church's ability to respond, it's understanding both. So I think if we just focus on practical responses, we need to, very practical we need to do, we get caught up with, well, how can we do it, how can we get time to do it, and there's a sort of project mania that comes about. But the being bit is also then the who am I, as an individual, and what's the questions, existential questions that people ask about in all this. If our focus is on who am I as an employee, that's a really good job, and all those things that come about. But then also for churches. So for the churches, the being and doing, the being is, well, how do we fit? Are we ourselves a community, or are we connected with the neighbourhood partnerships? All those things going on. And both seem important to me. The being bit about, do we have the confidence to understand where our faith sits with how we are locally, and are we connected with all those things going on? So exactly that sort of connected existence within a community, which we know brings well-being. And there's lots of evidence from family centres about the difference it makes from social networks to have our isolated parents in terms of mental health functioning, or a range of things. And that we need that being, and that being confidence, not only as individuals, but as church communities, with the community at large. And then the questions of doing become difficult, because they say, which is what I was saying, but how can you then build and see our role as a church, rather than trying to pretend we have to do something separate from or emulate a different sort of church project. There's something within those two that needs to be in parallel. And a lot of that's building confidence in churches to be able to see beyond those narrow confines. Because here's some of the big churches you mentioned, you have got lots of skills, but how do you encourage and enable some of the smaller ones to actually just look beyond their boundaries and actually lots of the things that they could do without being they're already doing and then just be find ways of opening it up.
I think it's a really good point about we need to avoid being project centred, I think, because God, I don't think God's given us a project to go and fix every problem that comes up in the world. I don't think God's given us the responsibility to take care of everyone's debt or to take care of, to be the guys with the tool bag, you know, and then it's really only the big churches with the big tool bag that can envision themselves making a real impact. I think actually what God tells us is first of all to love Him, and second to rely on Him for love for other people. And whatever we do, I mean, if that sounds soppy, then Jesus' demonstration of love isn't soppy. It's practical and it's real and it's sacrificial and it transforms people. And if we're faithful in our following of Jesus and introducing people, it's actually the only person who can really change someone's life, I believe, is Jesus. And yet Jesus doesn't seem to be real. To the people that you're talking about who never come into a church, then the question is, well, does it have to be about how we use the church resources and how we use the church building, how nice people think the church is, or can we be Jesus? Can we be a body with Christ at the head, literally doing the things that Jesus did and loving people the way Jesus does? And in practical terms, that might not mean having a project so much as just being there. That idea of the chaplain who was just there to cry with someone because they love them and because that's an outpouring of what they're doing. I think we need to be careful in terms of practical kind of taking responsibility for people's debt, because that's a little there's some biblical advice about that. But if what we're doing is an outpouring of genuine love for people, rather than just a need to carve out a niche for ourselves in a city because we're not sure where we fit in, I think there's a big difference between those two things.
But don't you think, though, as well, that somehow we've become, I mean, even as Christians, we've become, I don't say alienated, that's perhaps too strong a word, or immune to the needs of the people around us. And I was just thinking, as you were speaking, most people have heard me say this, I think, but my middle daughter was had very bad anorexia and was in a psychiatric hospital for nearly a year, actually. And we found, as a family, it was very difficult because although everybody minds about it, in our church community, people would have a feeling about it. Actually, for them to communicate how they felt about it to us in a way that meant anything to us was very difficult. Mm. It's now nearly a year since she's left, and we've talked about it quite a bit to different people. And I still think there is a disconnect that, even within our church community, people didn't know how to respond. Mm-hmm. And even having had a chance to reflect on it and, away from the emotion and the heat of the moment, they still actually don't know how to respond. Mm-hmm. And, maybe the debt thing in some ways is the same, that we I agree with you, we're not called to do a project or we're not called to meet other people's debts. But, what's the result of that going to be? Is it that people are going to think that people know and they don't mind, or that they've turned away, or that they've, I don't know what the answer is. And maybe it is the connecting back into community, or the people, or maybe people need, maybe it's the spiritual forces, or maybe it's that people haven't got the emotional literacy any longer to cope with stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, trying to distinguish between them, because when we were thinking about it, I thought maybe it's helpful, maybe it's not helpful, but actually pulling that kind of prophetic side, which is, kind of looking at the big question, the way it's done, to me, that's, I asked the question the other night, and I think Jesus says, you blind guide, you strain a gnat, you swallow a camel, And to me, the straining a gnat can be the policy stuff, and then the camel is okay, I'll do the policy, but I'll accept the big story. So, example, Martin Luther King said, how can I convince young men in Chicago that Molotov cocktails are not the answers to their problems, when my own government is the biggest purveyor of violence in the world and uses violence to solve all its problems? Mm-hmm. You know, so you go, you know, we're on the streets, we're asking people to evidence respect, you know, be part of community. Mm-hmm. And yet, what's the macro story? The macro story is not one of respect and life, it's one of money and profit. But I kind of was thinking maybe it's helpful, and I stand to be corrected, but maybe it's helpful to kind of have that separate. I think it is important to be, but I think it could also be very useful to be with some skills too, you know. So yeah, how do we, there are I'm sure there are some quite accessible insights that maybe there could be a piece of work with church leaders, and then filtering down to members of congregations, just around some low-level awareness of how, you know, just giving people, even if it's just confidence on how to interact on mental health. I work on a program called Delivering Race Equality in Mental Health Care, and one of the pieces of work that's being done by the network of workers that I manage is working with community groups just to do what they call mental health first aid, which is basically, this is what mental health is, don't be scared, let me tell you some things, and this is how you might interact. Mm-hmm. So they'll work with the Somali Development Group, or DECBAL, which is Asian organisations that would be aware but will have no kind of mental health awareness, and maybe there's something around that. And then actually, I'd be really inspired by this guy called Tom Sine. If you get a chance to look at his stuff, it's interesting. Real practical stuff he was doing. Like, well, I remember him giving a talk to Tear Fund, and he was saying, if a young couple get married and take out a mortgage, they'll probably spend the mortgage, they'll pay it off in 15 years. Well, they pay, I haven't got the numbers. They'll actually pay off the amount of the mortgage in 12 and a half, 13 years, but they'll be paying it for 25. Now, he was saying, if we as a church can mobilise the expertise and the resources that were in the church to be making interest-free loans of a sort to these young couples, then maybe that frees up about 10 years of work in life that they can invest in family, community, church, city, public life. You know, and the implications of that. But there's a real conscious effort there to say, where are the skills we'll need to put that in place? Interestingly enough, Asian communities still do this. And Jamaicans did it when they first came here. Jamaicans called it the partner system. In the 60s, you know, basically people couldn't get loans from the banks. So they set up a system they call partner, where everyone pays into a pot, someone takes the amount of money, buys a house, and then they keep paying into the pot. And it was a way of setting up an alternative economy. Mm-hmm. And in London, actually, I've seen in the Voice newspaper some prominent black people in London saying, we need to get this going again. Because mm-hmm. I understand Asians are still doing it among the community. You know, are there ways of mobilising skills and insights that would be, and yeah, it's not about, yeah, and I do recognise the danger. We're not trying to be project focused, but it's just about saying, you know, kind of almost looking at opportunities and ideas on equipping us to be ready, as it were.
Well, just to come back on the whole project, since I don't necessarily think that projects are a bad thing. I think when it talks about being salt and light, it talks about being visible, but it also talks about being dispersed and amongst. And if you're amongst, then you can respond to things. Yeah. I think a project is organising yourself to position to be able to respond. Mm-hmm. So some friends of mine organise themselves. They moved to Hartlepool on the estates and open up their doors every night to the community, and they have people come in, and the work they've done there in the last 18 months is fantastic and amazing, but it is a project. Mm. Or maybe it's a project from the outside in, if you know what I mean. I think there's perspectives on it, but it's all good, because I think when Faithworks talks about how they approach things, it's motivated by our Christian faith, we believe the following. I think, yeah, let's be motivated to get out there and involved and amongst and dispersed in communities.
Good. I'm going to need to go.
Yeah.
Then I'm off to do some peeling on the streets. That's, But the I think that you're absolutely right. There's no need for us to be project phobic.
No.
Say if it's a project we can't do it. But I guess yeah, where the heart I'm sharing is knowing how much tempting it is actually to get on and do something because it makes me feel better. Mm. And trying to separate this is me, it might not be any of you. But knowing that actually I think that God's calling for me, and I think for the church, is to grow in love and faithfulness.
Sure, sure.
And for the things that we do to be a heart response.
Yeah, definitely.
To that. Very practical, absolutely using our skills. We've got responsibility to use the talents and things that God's given us, and finding out where those are, you know, is the idea of an audit or something like that.
Yeah,
brilliant
yeah.
idea.
Sure.
As long as we run it through the filter of, are we doing it because we love? And one way to check that maybe might be to think, well, you know, on a smaller scale, would I do this for a friend? You know, someone I actually know and actually do love? And is that going to be, you know, and then is that scalable?
Yeah.
Is that something that can be replicated? Is it something that one person can do and make a difference with the people that they know, rather than setting up some big anonymous organisation that is another kind of, you know, big thing for people not to know and not to trust?
Yeah, sure.
So
I think from a personal perspective, I've been doing that living by faith for the last 3 years and not having any money and being involved in kind of local church. So I have an awareness of my own mistakes and foibles and misgivings and stuff like that, but I think when it says God is good, well, it's good for me and it's good for the community, he drags us all along on this kind of like path towards individual and communal and society-based redemption. Do you know what I mean? It's an ongoing thing that God's willing us on, every one of us, and it's all good. Right? And if we get into that position where we invest in things, like you said, motivated by love, to a point where we think, okay, well, we'll do this because these are good things to be getting involved with. I think that's kind of dragging us forward in a way.
Sorry,
I think, I mean, quite a few different things,
yeah,
but I just...
Well,
we're going to stop at the breakaway.
Soon would be nice.
Yeah, should soon, because I've actually got quite a lot to say, so that's
yeah.
fine. Yeah.
Now might be a good time just to have a little bit of coffee break and things like that. And
we can finish it.